Your turn, Matt. Why don't you join me up here? I'll just say a quick prayer for you, and then they're all yours, mate.
Thank you.
I hope you got some good jokes, because, you know, when I'm on, they get good quality jokes. None of them are terrible at all.
Mine might be of an equal standard, I think. So.
Let's pray for Matt, shall we? God, I want to thank you for this man of yours who has a very, you know, very special, unique, and very powerful ministry with the police service. And I want to thank you for the things you have done through him, and thank you for the things you are continuing to do through him. I pray this morning that as he comes and shares with us his experiences and what you have done in his life, God, may we be encouraged, may we be challenged. May we think about ways that we can, you know, be that unofficial chaplain in whatever place that we find ourselves in. But please give him right now, a clear mind in order to share the things that you would have him share this morning. Thank you, God. Amen.
Next one. Good morning. How are we going? You can all hear me okay. That's good. I'm just going to move this across. Talk among yourselves. Thank you. There we go. Oh, that works. Fantastic. That's good. So, look, for those of you who don't know me, my name's Matt Govan. I'm actually an employee of your church. If you didn't know that, you do now. Police chaplains are funded by the Queensland Police, but not employed by the Queensland Police. So the Queensland Police gives this church everything that it costs to actually employ me, and then the church kind of runs that through its books. So we're technically not not an officer, and we're not an employee of the Queensland Police, which in some ways does have its benefits for us. So that's why I'm coming to speak to you this morning. I'm not just some random bloke. I'm actually kind of a part of your church, and I'm happy to be here today to tell you what it is that I do, share a little bit of that, share a couple of stories of that and what that looks like, and then hopefully land with just a little bit of a biblical input of a model that I think is really great for chaplaincy, but not just for chaplaincy, but actually for, you know, for what all of us as Christians are called to do. We can go to the next slide. There's a couple of pictures of me in action. I didn't bring this thing called a stole today, but when I'm doing extremely official type stuff, that will usually be what I look like. We don't have uniform. This is about as close as it gets. But when we're operating in an official capacity, we wear the stole. We're from a lot of different denominations, so we've got Anglican, Catholic, Baptist, Church of Christ, Lutheran, Presbyterian, Wesleyan Methodist, AOG, C3, I think, as well. So we're from a pretty large, uniting, if I didn't say that, we're from a pretty large kind of background of people. And the thing that unites us is that when we do anything official, we're recognised by our stole, and we say our name badge as well, because it says that we're a police chaplain. That's the one thing that we all have in absolute common when we're all up front. So there you go. That's me doing a graduation in November. All right, this is me and my family. I thought I'd give you a quick introduction to me and who I am. I'm a Baptist minister. I've been a Baptist minister since 2005. I was ordained and trained in New South Wales. So I started my training in 2001. I've done pastoral ministry, but started chaplaincy in 2007 when I moved up here. Not as a police chaplain, but as an SU Queensland school chaplain. So I've walked that journey and done that. Chaplaincy is certainly something that I feel like God has always called me to. It's where I've fitted and been most comfortable. And it wasn't until mid-2016 that I started in my role as a Queensland police chaplain. And I'd say probably in that 2 years since then, I reckon I've fitted in nearly more ministry in that 2 years and had more experiences than in the previous kind of 10, 15. So, married, my wife Kylie. And myself, that's a picture actually taken when I was doing a wedding for my cousin. I have three kids. We're a blended family. So I was widowed in 2006 and I'm remarried again. So my son's the one on your right. I don't know if you can tell that or not, but people say we look a little bit similar. So that's Joshua. He's 14. The middle girl is Chloe. She's 14 as well. There's 4 months between Josh and Chloe. And then on the left is the other Joshua. We have two Joshuas in our family. It's a great talking point when my wife and I first met. You know, you got a Joshua, me too. Hey, let's get married. Sounds great. That's not how it worked, but so that's Josh, Chloe, and Josh, and we wouldn't be complete without pets. So we have a cat that's 7 years old that was found as a kitten underneath Kylie's work, and she kind of, you know, sent me a text one day and said, "What do you think of cats?" And I said, "I can't eat a whole one." There's one of those jokes. There you go. And I still haven't eaten it because it's still at home. That's Catula. Catula is actually, or Chatula, I think is the way you say it. It's Hebrew because I went back to my, you know, to my theological roots, and it means pretty female cat. So Catula. And then our dog is Mia. She's 3 years old. And we include them because we often will do stuff with Mia and stuff. So that's my family. That's who supports me. That's who cares for me. They're the people that, you know, look after me and are really kind of my rock, besides God, of course, are my rock and foundation through life and through ministry. And I wouldn't want to be doing this journey without them. So if they were here and between teenagers having jobs and going out to the footy with their mates and all that kind of stuff, they're not here, and my wife running them around. So they're really, you know, really quite supportive in me being here. So that's a little bit about me. We'll go to the next slide now. The Queensland Police Chaplaincy Service seeks to enhance the lives of all employees of the QPS, Queensland Police Service, by providing professional ministry which is tolerant, supportive and meaningful. That's like the mission statement of Queensland Police Chaplaincy. Gives you an idea of what we're there for. We're there to basically serve and care for anyone who'd call themselves members of the police family. So whether that's officers themselves, whether that's any civilian staff that work with the police, whether that's the extended families of those people or even retired police, we look after them all. That's our job. Anyone who'd be part of a police family, which is pretty wide, it's our job to be one of the people who looks after them and cares for them. We go to the next slide. Very timely. That's our Commissioner Ian Stewart. There's a police bulletin that comes out fairly often, and he's just actually done a piece on police chaplaincy, so it was quite timely, and I thought what he wrote kind of sums up pretty well what's going on in terms of chaplaincy. So I thought I'll stick that up there. Chaplains are part of the welfare support structure of the QPS. They are adaptable in the provision of pastoral care to all people, regardless of rank, creed, gender or status, in all types of situations. That's a very general statement, but that gives you an idea of, in a very general sense, what we do. Obviously, I'm going to flesh that out a little bit more for you this morning. Let's kick on to the next one now. All over Queensland, there are 39 chaplains, Queensland Police chaplains. Six are full-time, 19 part-time, 14 volunteer, and we cover about 15,000 staff. That doesn't include their families and the retired police and all that as well. That's just who's kind of pretty much employed at the moment. Map of Queensland, you can see the QPS divides it up into all types of really amazing ways. If we go to the next slide, it'll focus us in a little bit more. So I'm part of what's called Central Region, which is in that big black circle there. And that covers a whole bunch of area right up to past Mackay, as you can see. Go to the next one again. The bit that I cover is Sunshine Coast and Wide Bay Burnett, or Burnett. That's right. Yep. I thought that would have something different on the side there. Maybe it doesn't. So that's got about 1,000 people in it that I'm responsible for, and some other chaplains as well. And if we go to the next slide, That's Wide Bay, so I cover part of Wide Bay. In Wide Bay, there's four chaplains, one full-time, which is me. We've got three part-time chaplains, and that's about 530 staff. So my role in the Wide Bay is to be there and to be present whenever I'm needed, but primarily because we've got a chaplain in Gympie and a chaplain in Maryborough and a chaplain in Bundaberg, who are part-time, my role is really to look after them, make sure they're following up on everything that they need to do, check in on them and make sure they're doing all right, make sure they're aware of any welfare issues that are happening that they may not be aware of. And then obviously they're involved in other ministry as well, so they're often people like Donnie that are, you know, are a pastor and just happen to be a chaplain or something as well, so they've got a whole bunch of other commitments as well, so if their commitment prevents them from doing anything, then I'm paid to be there 24/7, so off I go. It's good, it's fun. And then there's a little circle of the Sunshine Coast, gives you an idea. I feel like it's like I'm a very small part of it really, aren't I? But yeah, so there's the Sunshine Coast in that little circle, and if we go to the next one, there's a map of the way the QPS does the Sunshine Coast. The arrow is where we are, basically, Kawana. That's actually pointing to Kawana Station, which is over there, so pretty close. Two chaplains, myself and another guy called Michael Cody. He's just a volunteer, so he doesn't get paid for his time, but is a really great bloke. And there's about 470 officers and staff in this area. And because we're the only two, Mike covers Nambour and Palmwoods stations primarily for me, and I cover everything else. So there's about 17, 18 police locations in total, and I'll travel around and visit and do all kinds of things within that. So that gives you a bit of a snapshot of the way that we divide up Queensland, all of the chaplains, and then coming down to what I specifically do. It's a bit of an area, hey? Yeah. All right, next slide. Yeah. Okay, so I sat down at my computer on Thursday, and up until about 12 o'clock on Thursday, this is what's happened in the last week. So I said, for 7 days, just give me some, you know, some quick stats. I don't need to read all those out for you, I don't think, for you to see them. Can everyone see them? So they are? Yep. That's not everything that happens, that's just like a snapshot of some of the things and some of the offences that people come up against. No, you can see traffic's big, you can see stealing's big, you can see drugs are big, you can see domestic violence is pretty big. That doesn't mean that everyone's been charged out of that necessarily. And even two deaths. That's a fairly slow week in terms of that sort of thing. Quite a lot of stuff happening, hey. That's in 7 days. That's for all of the Sunshine Coast. Not up in Wide Bay as well, that's just for Sunshine Coast. Our police are busy. Busy chasing up on all those kinds of things. Busy dealing with everything that those things can bring with them. And obviously, some of the stuff up the top, yeah, that's, they deal with that, that's just part of their job. But when it gets down to stuff like domestic violence, attempted suicides, deaths, that starts to be where the rubber really hits the road and it gets very real in their job and it becomes a lot more confronting for them. If we go to the next slide, and I'll probably talk from that a bit. So in this last year, that's all the kinds of stuff that I've done. I'll leave that up there and tell a couple of stories as I go through that, if that's okay. But there's lots of things up there. That's some of what I do. That's what would fit on the slide anyway. So I'm a little bit busy. I'm sure Donnie's talked about some of this stuff before. So yeah, anything sticking out from that? Not really. All right. So sometimes we have really tough things to deal with. We have those calls that come in at 4 p.m. Of a Friday and say, hey, Matt, there's been a police officer suicide. We need you on deck. And so off you go to the station, to the family, and deal with that. You do the funeral for that. You walk the family through that. and you continue to walk with the family through that. And that's something that continues probably for all of my career. I'll continue to walk with that and continue to do that. You have the people that ring up and say, hey, can we just catch up for a coffee? Went to that fatal car accident a few weeks ago. Thought I was doing okay, but now every night I have a dream where I walk up to the person who died in the accident, and I turn her over, and it's my daughter's face, and I can't get that image out of my head, because the job that officer went to was someone who was the same build, the same hair colour and hairstyle, and the same age as his daughter. So he's dealing with that and just wants to have a coffee and a chat about how he might move forward from that point. You get a call at 10 o'clock on a Thursday morning from an officer who says, hey, Matt, you know that my wife is really sick. She's dying. Can you come to the bedside and pray before we finally lose her and just be here with our family and comfort us and support us and help us out? And you're not expecting that call. It just, that's what happens in your day. So we go and do that. We get asked to do weddings. Hey, Matt, do you do weddings? Yes. Will you marry us? Yes. Normally the answer. And so we get to journey couples through that kind of stuff too, and that can be a really good and is a really great experience. We might have a call from an officer that says, oh, listen, Matt, my wife is driving me nuts, or my kids are just going crazy, or, you know, we've just kind of separated and I just need someone to talk to help us through this kind of thing, or my wife's changed the access I have to my kids now, can we have a bit of a chat about that, or my husband's changed the access to the kids, can we have a chat about that, and so I'll go and do that as well. Might get a call that says, hey Matt, my wife, who, you know, as you know, is pregnant and is having twins, she's just going into labour, she's at 27 weeks, and so both babies are preemie, and the girl's doing alright but the boy's not, I need your help. Can you support me? But once they're transferred up to the Sunshine Coast University, can you help to find me some accommodation? Can't really afford much. And so we help to do that. That's part of our role is to do that. And we've got some really great organisations that are kind of part of the QPS that can help fund and help officers actually have free accommodation near hospitals for when they need it. Came out of the fact that often officers are injured when they're doing, you know, when they're doing their job. When you're arresting someone and they're not completely okay with being arrested, things tend to go a bit wrong sometimes. Often people aren't okay with being arrested. And it can be something as simple as an officer gets their thumb bent back or falls over or whatever. But, there's lots of workplace injuries that happen for police. You'd be surprised, actually. And sometimes I need to go and get surgery on, like, knees or, you know, all that kinds of stuff. So we have places that they can go to so that they can pretty much have free accommodation while they go and at least get their operation is the word I'm looking for. While they at least go and get their operation. So and chaplains are the conduit to actually help provide some of that to people. It might be a call that you get that says, hey, Matt, there's just been an industrial accident, and this happened to me last year. Guy working on a truck, and the cab of the truck has closed down on him, and he's been killed. The dad's just actually connected with his son again after years and years of being away. They work at the same place, and the son saw it happen. Can you come out and actually just be here for the family, for the workers, but especially for the son? Because we've got a bunch of really upset people here and we just kind of need to do our job, clear the scene, and we really need someone there just to help kind of balance all the emotion and everything out. So you jump in your car and off you go and pray like mad and talk to God a lot and say, help me when I get there to be what you need me to be. And it's amazing how often God just shows up and does that. And there's been things that I've walked out of that I've gone, I couldn't really say what I did, but I just know that I know God was there, God worked through me, and that was pretty awesome. So there's all these kind of times in my day when I'm having these big, God, I really need you and rely on you, and then God comes through as he tends to do most of the time. I'm sure you've You know, I'm sure you found that. And then you're having this big kind of, you know, praise session in your car as you're driving away, trying to look, you know, not look like a goose, going, "Yes, that was awesome, God. Thank you for being with me. Fantastic." Yeah, it's good stuff. I do have those moments in my day. It's really good. When Brett Fort was shot last year, and they just had the first anniversary of that, I think probably about 20 minutes after he'd been shot, weren't even sure whether he was alive or not at that stage, I was already getting a call from the chaplain who's up there and from the person who looks after all of QPS welfare to say, "We need people on the ground. Can you go up and help with that?" So yeah, up I go and get thrown into a room with a bunch of officers, and as I'm talking to them, I find out these are actually the officers that were there when things unfolded and saw things happen. And I'm talking to people who literally have been fired on, have fired shots back at people, have still got blood on them and dirt and all that kind of stuff. That's a fairly confronting place for me to be, let alone for them to be. So we never know what we're going to be thrown into. We get to do really cool stuff like National Police Remembrance Day, which is like the police version of Anzac Day. That's basically how I say it. So that's a day where we remember officers that have been killed or have died because of their service to the Queensland Police. That's becoming a lot wider now. They're not just recognising those that are actually killed in the line of duty, but actually those who die as a result of their service, and that can include stuff like suicide as well. When officers suicide, police don't like to admit that, yeah, that might be because of their job, but often there's a whole bunch of built-up stuff from the kinds of things they see, and it's certainly a contributing factor for that. I got to do the opening of the Queensland Police Games, which were on last year, year before, over here at the... I wasn't the only person that did it, but when they have everyone else do their thing, I was actually able to, you know, to bring a prayer and a blessing to the games as well to open that. So we get to do really cool stuff like that as well. And I was kind of the chaplain for the games, so I got to go around to a whole bunch of different sites and just catch up with a whole bunch of officers, see how they're going, make sure that they're doing okay. I was involved in the Brett Fort funeral, so that was a pretty big show. I don't know if you watched that on TV or not, but that was one of the biggest things that happened. That's happened for Queensland Police in the last few years in terms of that, and those kinds of things being televised. The next day I was doing a wedding out at Kenilworth under a tree with two officers and their two witnesses. They just happened to be the same age as what poor Brett was, but that's the kind of emotional journey that we can go on sometimes in a day as well. So I've gone from one day doing a funeral to the next day doing a wedding for a couple. One day to the next. Totally different circumstances. People the same age. So it really kind of brings it home for me as well. A lot of what I do is just to be present, is to drive around, not just drive around, but to drive around, visit all the different police stations and just wander in and see what's happening, say hi to people, just connect with them, see what the vibe is in that station, any news on what's happening around the district today, anyone I need to catch up on. And very often I find when I'm there in the stations and I'm present, loitering with intent, we tend to call it. but it is just being present. It's amazing how often you walk into a station and you'll wander around and someone will go, "Oh, hey, can we catch up for a coffee next week?" "Yeah, we can. How did you hear about, you know, blah, blah, up at Nambour?" "No, I didn't hear about that." "Yeah, they've got a job they're not really coping with. Might be good just for you to, you know, send them a text and check up on them." "Oh, yeah, okay, I'll do that." "Oh, Matt, hey, you must be here about the blah, blah that happened half an hour ago." "Don't know anything about that happened half an hour ago. What's going on?" So they tell you and then, you know, job's on. And you're off into that. So it's a very big, very expansive, very large role, but my role is really to be, and there's a guy that I go and meet with fairly often. He's a retired officer, bad PTSD, he'll never work again, poor fella. Not just from the police, but he's been in the Defence Force and in the AFP and also been in the QPS, so he's, you know, kind of keeps throwing himself into areas where he sees a lot of trauma. It's affected him really badly, but he calls us as chaplains and always has travelling angels of peace, which I quite like. We're like a travelling angel of peace. We go into a workplace that can have anything happening, and our role, of course, is to bring God into that. But into that we bring, you know, we try and bring peace, we try and bring hope, we try and bring some meaning. Often we're trying to bring some calm. Travelling around, giving people hope and peace and meaning. Trying to do that anyway. Very much relying on God to do that. Very much relying on the call and the direction of the Spirit to say, where do I go to today? Which stations do I need to visit? Which people do I need to touch base with? And sometimes I'll have a rough plan and that'll get thrown out the window. And other times I'll be driving along and, oh, yeah, I'll probably better call into that station. And you don't really want to, and you're not really motivated to do it, because last time you were there, everyone was working really hard and you didn't really get to chat to anyone, and they gave you a really bad coffee and you don't really want that coffee again, but they thought it was amazing, so you're going to have to put up with that again. But you go, all right, I'll go in, and then bang, God by the Spirit has led you to some amazing kind of, I just needed to be right there in that place in that time. And I see that happen again and again and again and again and again and again and again, and it's like God keeps going, you've just got to trust me, you know, like I know what I'm doing, I know where the people are, I know what they need, I know where you need to be, and if you just listen to me, then maybe you'll do an even better job than you think you're already doing. So, yeah, call them tomorrow. Do this separately. So, I've grown a lot in the job as well. It's become very much a role where I've now really learnt to pray and to listen to God, and even those little promptings of, oh man, I really should call into that station. You know, maybe on the way, you know, like I really just want to drive home, but maybe I should just call into that one more place. I've learnt to start to listen to that, and gee, it's normally right. So that's been a big lesson for me. Just having a look at some of the things that are up there in terms of anything I want to particularly talk about. So we deal with officers not just in terms of stuff that actually happens for them in the policing role, and there's heaps of that stuff, but also things that would happen for them just in their everyday lives as well. So that can be to do with their marriage, it can be to do with their divorce, it can be to do with their boyfriends or their girlfriends or their kids or their health or whatever. All that stuff that happens in life apart from your job. Police are actually normal people. I don't know if you've ever, you know, like ever come across any. They seem like they're not normal sometimes, but they are actually normal people with families and lives and all that kind of stuff going on. And they have all that stuff going on, as well as all the police stuff that goes on as well. And that can be quite stressful for them, because they can often cope with the police stuff, and then they just don't have capacity after dealing with all that stuff to then go home and deal with life stuff as well. So often we're the people that help them to find that capacity, help to be that person that will actually help them navigate through some of that stuff. Pray for our police. They see a lot of stuff. They see a lot of stuff that we don't ever usually see or usually come across. And when I say PTSD up there, there's some really great post-traumatic stress or post-traumatic stress disorder. There's some really great research being done now about the accumulative effect of that, of spending, as police do, 20, 30, 40 years on the road being a police officer, seeing violence, having people want to fight with them every time they want to arrest them, going to fatal car accidents, going to suicides, going to scenes where people have been bashed up and bloodied and murdered and all that kind of stuff. And you can imagine over 20 years, that takes its toll. Most of us in our lives, we might say, yeah, maybe I might see a body, a dead body. If I see that often, It'll be in a fairly peaceful, serene environment, so it'll be in a hospital where someone's died in a hospital bed, or it'll actually be at a funeral where the casket's open and the person's made to look like they're almost alive and just sleeping. And we see them really nicely like that. And we might see that maybe once or twice in our lives. Potentially a bit more, but that's about it. Police will just see people who have died everywhere. People don't clean up the scenes of car accidents before they get there. They don't clean up the scenes of stabbings or all that kind of stuff. Police go into that, see it, deal with it, clock off for the day, and then go home and also deal with all the stuff of life, husbands, wives, kids, running people around for sport, being involved in the stuff they're involved in as well. They see a bunch of stuff that we never see and are involved in a bunch of stuff that we, you know, that we don't appreciate. And they do that quite willingly. They do that because they want to serve the community. 99% of them are really, really good, hardworking men and women that really want to make a difference in society and make the community a safe place for us to live in. We go back to those stats, the one before. You might be surprised that some of that stuff's happening on the Sunshine Coast. Some of you might be, some of you mightn't be. That's a relatively slow week. 31 attempted suicides. Do the maths on that over 7 days. It's quite a few a day. Some of those might be fairly innocuous and just kind of someone saying, I'm going to commit suicide and not really doing anything. Others of them might involve all kinds of things. And the police are lucky to get there in time. Or the people haven't quite done it right. But there's still trauma when they turn up and see that and experience that. I'm lucky enough that I don't get called to jobs like that. So, so yeah, makes sense. Give you a bit of an idea of what I do, how I do it. Yeah, it's hard to talk about all that stuff. But you know, when they pull you up for a ticket and they look a bit grumpy. You know, that's okay. Be nice. Do what you're told. For goodness sake, do what you're told. Police say to me all the time, if people just did what they were told, our lives would be easy. When we say do this, do that, you know, get on the ground, do it. Because we tell you 20 times, you're actually resisting. And then we, like, use all our options of force and all that kind of stuff. And, yeah, that's just loads of paperwork for them. Heaps of paperwork goes into policing as well. So it's not just the job, it's then all the paperwork that happens as a result of that as well. Huge amount of it, actually, like especially if you're charging someone. All the I's have to be dotted and, you know, the T's are crossed and it's got to be right, because the last thing you want is someone who's been molesting children to get off because you grabbed that key piece of evidence and didn't have that listed in your search warrant. So then it can't be used, even if it's the thing that actually clinches it. So sometimes it seems like they do nothing with cases, but it's because they've got to actually get everything right before they can actually make a move. The last thing I just want to cover is just a really quick look at... We'll flick forward a couple. This is the story of the walk to Emmaus. I don't know if any of you know it. Or not, probably you do. I don't know if I have to read the whole lot. I think for time maybe I won't. But it's the morning where Jesus is actually raised from the dead, but the disciples really don't know that yet. The women have gone down to the tomb, they've been told by an angel, the body wasn't there, angels told us that he'd, you know, raised to life. According to Luke's gospel, no one has seen him yet. It's kind of getting later in the afternoon now, and there's a couple of people that decide, you know what, we're just going to, you know, and they're part of Jesus's kind of probably about 120 inner circle, and they decide, we're going home. All this stuff that's supposed to happen this third day, this, you know, he's been killed, we've waited around, we're heading home. And so they walk about 11 k's from Jerusalem back to their home in Emmaus. And they start on that journey, and a guy comes alongside them, ask them what they're doing, what they're talking about. They say, oh, you know, don't you know, you're the only one that hasn't heard about this guy Jesus that, you know, we thought was really fantastic, and he's been killed and he's supposed to be raised from life, but no one's seen him, and yeah, we're just heading home. And this guy says, oh, you know, let me just share some stuff from Scripture about this Jesus guy that you're talking about, and explain stuff to them as they wander along. They're 11 Ks. I don't know how long it takes to walk 11 Ks in the Middle East, but you know, maybe a couple of hours, I don't know. So explains all that kind of stuff. Looks like he's going to keep going on his journey. They go, no, mate, come in, you know, have a meal with us. And it's when this guy that has joined them on the journey actually breaks bread that they go, it's Jesus. And when they recognise that, he's gone. And they bolt back into Jerusalem and burst through the doors and go, hey, guess what? We've seen him, blah, blah, blah. And then Jesus is there with them as well. Pretty cool, amazing story. That's the abridged version of what's in your Bible. The police do get a Bible, or we get Bibles, like all the police don't get a Bible, but Bible Society Australia does Queensland Police Bibles that we're able to give to officers. I would often give them out at funerals and at weddings. I think they're appropriate times, and then other times at memorials and stuff as well. I've given them to families and that kind of stuff, and they do read them. They do find comfort in them, and it's an easy version to read. So if they've never been to the Bible before, it's really great. So we just flick over to the next thing. I think really this story, it gives us, and you might have to flick that one more time, it gives us a model of four things that basically I think I'm called to do as a chaplain, but we're really called to do as people as well. Incarnation is a really big kind of churchy word for just really meaning being like God to people. Is that an easy enough way for me to say it? The incarnation is Jesus coming down, being with us, there's all this, you know, theology around it. For us to be incarnational means that we get alongside people and we be like Jesus. And in this story, Jesus isn't just kind of sitting on the road waiting for people to come along. He actually goes out to the people, and engages with them. He's got to do the work. I believe we're called to do that as well. I can't sit in my office and wait for officers to come to me. They'll never do it. They just won't do it. I've got to get out there and be with them. I don't know what you've found in your workplaces and the people that you hang out with, but generally people don't rock up and knock on your door and say, hey, listen, I just really want you to tell me about the good news of Jesus Christ. Has that ever happened to anyone? Maybe it happens occasionally, but it doesn't happen very much. We've got to go to people and be with them and be like Jesus to them and hang out with them, share our lives with them, and have their lives shared with us as well. We draw near to people. We join them in their journey and join them in their journey of life and through life. I think the next thing we see, and I'm starting to race through this now, is inquiry. When Jesus rocks up with these people, he doesn't just blast in straight away and go, hey, listen, let me tell you what you really need in your life. Hey, guys, what's up? What are you talking about? What's happening? And in fact, if you read the account, Jesus actually kind of walks up and just walks alongside them for a while, listening to what they're saying. Doesn't really say anything. So that's going to start the bauble. So really what he does is not just kind of rock up and get straight into the gospel, but he learns about their lives. What are you discussing? What are you chatting about? What things have happened in Jerusalem? He makes inquiry. He asks questions and asks some quite leading questions at times. And I think that's a role that I have as a chaplain, but that we can have as people as well. Once we're alongside someone and sharing in their journey of life, we need to get to know who they are. What's their story? Where are they at? What are their hopes? What are their dreams? What are their fears? How are they feeling? What's happening for them? These two guys on the road, they would have been feeling hopeless, dejected. They even expressed it at one stage. We hoped that he would be the saviour of Israel, but he's not. All our hopes are dashed. They're struggling to find meaning and purpose and all that kind of stuff in what's happened. And Jesus is just asking questions, as we can ask questions, to find out, well, you know, what do you think? What is the meaning and purpose in this? And maybe they're not finding any but we don't know unless we ask. So we have incarnation and inquiry, getting alongside people, and then actually kind of drawing things out of people, I suppose. Interpretation is the next thing. That doesn't mean we have to sit down with people and interpret the Bible with them, although that's what Jesus kind of does in this setting. I can't imagine that he did it too formally like I would have in a theological college years ago. But he's able to look at the story of God and plug them in to where their story intersects with that. So their story is very much bound up in Jesus at the moment. They're wondering all this stuff about Jesus. Who is he? We thought he was the Messiah, but we're not really sure now. And Jesus goes, well, let me just show you some places in the Bible where it actually does talk about Jesus being the Messiah and being the promised one and what it's going to mean. And yes, he does have to suffer. And just explaining to people and having their story and God's story and maybe being able to plug them together in some way. That requires for us to know the story of the Bible really, really well. So I'm glad that we did, that we did this morning, because if someone shares their heart and where they're at, then you might go, that's that bit in, that is just like that story in Luke. Oh, that's a bit like that thing in Obadiah where, and you can go, look, you know what, your story and what you're feeling, what you're thinking, where you're at, that's a bit like a story that I know about too. And you can start to plug people's stories into where God's story is, to interpret, I guess, people's lives and stories and start to show them how it can meld in with God's story. And the final thing I think that we can do is ignition. That might sound a bit strange. One of my favourite phrases in the whole Bible is where these guys, Jesus is like, they've finally realised who Jesus is and he's gone, like literally disappeared from their view. And they go, didn't our hearts burn as he walked along and explained the scriptures to us? It warmed our hearts. Our hearts burned with this. When our hearts set on fire, there's all these different kind of versions that are in. We want to kindle within people a burning and unquenchable desire to find and follow Jesus, to find and follow meaning and hope and purpose in their lives, so that they go on that journey of discovery for themselves. I don't know if you've ever led people through this kind of thing, but when you find that someone gets to a point where they're really on fire for God and they want to know more, and they're reading the Bible and they're ringing you going, man, I just read this thing, it's like so amazing, and you're going, wow, you're reading the Bible, like I better read mine again. Their hearts are really set on fire. We want people to want to know about Jesus, want to know about Christ, to want to know how his story molds in with their story and how we can bring meaning and hope and purpose to them. And I think when they do, look what happens at the story. At the end of this journey, these two guys don't just go, wow, that's great, set on fire for the Lord, let's continue eating. Immediately, they jump straight back out on the road, they go back to the other disciples and they burst, like I can imagine them bursting through the doors going, guys, guess what? We just saw Jesus. But the whole story. They tell their story. So they kind of repeat this cycle of incarnation, inquiry, interpretation and ignition. And we see then, once we get through the end of Luke and into Acts and Romans and on, we see that this is what the disciples kind of do again and again and again. They draw beside people. They draw out what's happening for them in their lives. They plug that into where God's story is and then kind of set them on fire and then move on. That doesn't mean that I, as a chaplain, move on from people and leave them behind. I continue on the journey, but I think you know what I'm saying. I think that's just not the calling of me as a chaplain, but I think all of us as Christians are called to get beside people and journey through life with them, to be Jesus to them, to learn about where they're really at and who they are and what their story is, what are their hopes, their dreams, their fears. That's going to mean we're going to need to ask them some questions and get to know who they really are, to listen rather than speaking into and to really genuinely, I think, get to know them. Sometimes Christians aren't very good at that. We just want to, you know, we just want to get to the, you know, I've got to tell you. So really working a journey with people, showing them how their story and God's story melds together, and then hoping that they're set on fire to find that meaning and hope and purpose and Jesus for their lives themselves. And then they go on to repeat that cycle. That's kind of how I approach chaplaincy, what I try and do in my daily role with people. And I think it's not just a calling of me as a chaplain or SU chaplains to be, you know, called to do that, but all of us as unofficial chaplains, as was said earlier, that we all are that, and we're all called to be God to people and to show people God. And I believe that we can do that, and the Road to Emmaus model can be a really great one for us to, you know, to learn from. So go home, read it, see what you can glean out of it, and you too can be a chaplain to the people who are around you and going through not just the tough times of life, but, you know, the really good celebratory times of life as well. Let me pray for you, and then I guess we're going to finish with a song. Yeah. God, I thank you for your love and your mercy and your grace and your forgiveness. I thank you for the men and women of the Queensland Police Service, and that's a very selfish prayer, I pray, I know, but I pray that all of those who are on shift today, God, that you keep them safe, that you keep them well, that you help them to do their job with integrity, but to also do their job with care, and do their job with safety, and arrive home to their husbands and wives and kids and parents at the end of this day. God, I pray that you'll help all of us to represent you. We're your ambassadors, we're your pleasing scent, we're your light, we're your salt. We are very much a part of your great commission. You use us in that context. And God, I pray that you will help all of us to represent you well, wherever we find ourselves, at work, at school, at home, in the playground, at uni, even at church. Help us to represent you, and for through people meeting us and encountering us, that they might encounter some of you, Christ, and that through that they might find some hope and meaning and purpose and ultimately faith in you in their lives. Thank you for the stuff this church is already doing with that, God, and just pray that that can absolutely continue more and more. And we ask this, Jesus, in your name. Amen.